Welcome to the Happy Dog, Happy Human podcast, where we explore the intersection between human mental health and our relationships with dogs. This is Sharon.
And I'm Angela. In season two, we're exploring social and cultural phenomena that impact our well-being so we can reduce stigma and challenge the status quo, while also learning better ways to care for ourselves and our dogs throughout the journey. We hope you love it. Hey everyone, this is Angela.
And this is Sharon. And today we are going to talk about neurodiversity in dogs. So we're going to explore, we'll do a quick recap of what neurodiversity is, and then we're going to explore what this looks like in dogs in terms of behavior, cognitive processing, and sensory sensitivity. And we're going to share our personal experiences of living with dogs who are neurodiverse and share some tips about how to support dogs when they have different needs than you expect.
Sounds great to me. And like every other episode, we're going to start by pausing and taking a breath so we can center ourselves and really focus on the topic and relax our shoulders a bit. So you'll hear some silence and we'll be back with you shortly.
All right. Let's do it.
Always find that so helpful.
I know. Yeah. I find it like really relaxing. And then I sometimes have to remember to like open my eyes and get back to the show.
I realized while I was doing this breathing that I kind of put on this like fake smile when I started and it was hurting my cheeks. And I was like, oh, wait, relax your face. Why are you smiling like that? So that was nice.
That is nice. What a good like reminder from your body, right? That you need to relax that like tension that builds in your cheeks when you're smiling like that.
Yeah, well, because it's kind of you're turning yourself on in a way and it's forced, right? It's not like a natural smile. So
exactly.
Yeah. No, it's good. Smiles. It's exactly. Natural smiles. Anyway, I'm really excited about this topic, and I always say this every single time about the dog episodes, but I love how we explore these because there's so much I don't know when we're talking about our furry companions. I think there's that much I don't know when we're talking about humans, but I think, you know, in today's world, we like to pretend that we know and we like to have a lot of opinions. So, so I find these episodes very liberating in that sense because we just don't know.
I love that. Yeah, it is. There is so much unknown. And I feel like for me, these episodes are like, they're so important because dogs for me have been like a, they're like a special interest of mine, like that I've had for my whole life. And so they've always been something that I can talk about. So they're like a conduit for me into interacting with other people because it's something that I enjoy talking about and feel comfortable talking about.
I love that. I mean, that's what it's always, you know, they call it like a social lubricant. And I feel like dogs really are that. People always love to come together and talk. You know, yesterday we're totally diverging, but it's fine. Also, before I diverge, I do want to say this is our last episode of season two, and whew, that totally deserves its own moments.
Deep breath.
We have worked really hard, and I'm so proud of what we've delivered this season. I think we really tapped into our authenticity and vulnerability in a whole new way. And I'm really glad to be ending on this note, talking about dogs and neurodiversity. I think it completes the circle.
Yeah, totally. Ooh, thanks for saying that and giving us a moment to
Yes.
celebrate that.
Anyway, going back to my other place that I was diverting to,
Yeah.
yesterday I was in the park, and I took Pepper and Biscuit, and I noticed that there was a get together of people with their pups, and it was just a reminder. There were like at least six pups, you know, six people, and it just reminded me how amazing, you know, pups can be in that sense of just bringing people together and having something to talk about and having a moment to socialize with other people. It was really great. Everyone was laughing and like having a good time, and you know, and then I came over and I was like, "Is it okay if Biscuit plays with your dogs?" Because Biscuit likes to play with other dogs, and they were very inviting. And yeah, it just gives you a lot of warm feelings.
Yeah, like this little community of people that you could like, you had a reason to join them, and they also were welcoming of you.
Exactly. So I always, yeah, I think that's such a powerful thing that dogs can open it for us, open the portal.
Yeah, exactly. That's really cool.
Yeah. So neurodiversity in dogs.
Yeah. So, as a recap, neurodiversity just means neurological diversity. So, differences in nervous system functioning in terms of sensory sensitivity, like some individuals being hypersensitive, others being hyposensitive, differences in how you think. So like thinking from one thought to the next in a like straight line, or thinking more in like a spider web way where you're making associations and kind of jumping around from thought to thought, differences in memory and attention as well.
Yeah, and I think it's, I mean, it just highlights the diversity of the human brain, and also just a reminder that it's a social justice term, that was meant to be used, you know, again, to like celebrate differences and highlight differences of how our brains can work. So I guess the question is, can we apply this, or should we apply this when we're talking about dogs and their brains and how they work?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And I don't know the answer, so I'm excited to talk about it with you.
Yeah, I don't think there is a right answer, but I'm excited to explore it also. But since this is a topic that you've explored a little bit, Sharon, on your social media, I am curious, you know, from what you've looked into or what you observe, what are your findings so far?
Well, in terms of neurodiversity, I've heard that, or I read somewhere that Judy Singer, who originally coined the term, called this a biological truism, meaning that it's something that, like, you don't need to do any research in order to prove it because you can just look around you and see, like, oh, that person is behaving differently than this person, you know? And same with dogs, you know, you can see, like, there could be 10 dogs in a room and a cat walks in, and not all the dogs are going to behave the same way to that situation. And you also can't disprove it. You can't, there's no way to disprove this because of the way nervous systems develop. You know, they develop through experience. And like we were talking about the identical twin studies before, you know, like even people who have identical physiology, they don't develop to be the same person because they have different and unique experiences.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, that is a very kind of simple and easy way to look at it, like how dogs behave and obviously they behave differently. I mean, I have three, and so I really can see that. But it's interesting also to think about, let's use the term neurotypical, because we talked about that when we talked about humans. So is there a neurotypical way for dogs to fit into? And is that something that, I mean, it is, I mean, I'll answer some of my own question. I think the answer is that we as humans would like them to behave in a certain way, which we've talked about before, and like what we consider socially acceptable, and like how they should move in our world and in our own, social doggy construct. And so what dogs fit within that norm? That's what I'm thinking. I mean, just from thinking slightly about it.
I think about it in a similar way because you're right with the term neurotypical and the term neurodivergent. Those terms are really came about because of this acknowledgement that there is a social norm, like a socially constructed norm for how we view human behavior. And then neurodivergent people are diverging from that norm and behaving differently due to their different neurophysiology. And so if we're like, so using those terms for dogs, I think that's the perfect question is like, is there a socially dominant norm or a socially constructed norm for how we view dog behavior?
I mean, for me, I think the answer is yes, very much so. I think like we expect if a dog is raised with, well, we expect them to not be aggressive, let's say that. We expect them to not show aggression. We expect them to be socially, what's the word? Like outgoing, I want to say that. And responsive to, even strangers, petting, cuddling, all those sorts of things. We expect them to not bark excessively. I'm even thinking about like if the neighbor's dog barks too much, then some neighbors will try to, get that dog removed from the home, for example, right? So that's like a social expectation of a person's dog. I'm trying to think of others. Is there anything else that
Being able to like eat treats whenever we need to train them, or being able to sleep in a crate and be happy about that. Like we even say that dogs are like denning animals like wolves, and so they should like a crate.
That's a really good point. We expect them to enjoy being crate trained, and food driven, which is what you were saying, because some are not. We expect them to play fetch.
Not every
Funny
dog
story, not every dog plays fetch.
does that.
Actually, most don't, has been in my
Yeah, that's
experience,
true. They
from
have
my
to learn.
observations. They have to learn. Yeah. Yeah, so do we, I mean, I think I can say with certainty that we create social norms for dogs.
And then on the flip side, when they don't conform to those norms, we have feelings about that and judgments about it, like
Yes.
calling them disobedient or aggressive, for example.
Two other ones are jumping on people and leash pulling. And so, like you said, you see a dog that's pulling a leash, or jumping on someone, then we think they're badly behaved or disobedient, or that they're a bad dog, quote unquote.
And it's interesting because like our expectations aren't necessarily what is normal for dogs to begin with.
Right.
Like walking on leash, it's not normal for a dog to walk next to us and look at us or even have their head up. You know, it's normal for them to have their head down, walking forward and following a smell.
Yeah, and even the barking example, dogs bark. Like,
They do.
and I can imagine, as someone who works intimately with dogs, you must have a lot of people coming to you saying, "How do I make my dog stop barking?"
Yes, that is a common complaint. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's a social expectation of ours for dogs, and we want them to make less noise because it hurts our ears, which sometimes is understandable, but also that's not barking is how they communicate, and
Right.
that's not something you're gonna stop doing. Like,
Ah,
you
yeah,
know?
exactly.
I
Right.
mean, of course there's situations where barking excessively might have something to do with an underlying issue, psychological or a physical problem, but in general, dogs bark and that's how they communicate.
Right. Yeah, I think what you're saying is there's like a difference between the dog like communicating something intentionally and having like a panic attack because they're seeing the mail carrier. You know what I mean? And
Right.
they're not able to stop themselves.
Right. Well, as we're talking about this, I for sure live with a dog who I would consider neurodivergent. Guess which one?
Is it touching?
Yes. Definitely Duchess. She diverts from the norm in a lot of ways. I joke sometimes, I say she's like a cat in a dog's body because of the way
Yeah.
she behaves. But she pretty much doesn't fit any of those norms that we're discussing.
Yeah.
Except maybe leash pulling. She doesn't pull the leash. But other than that, she definitely diverges. I mean, we can talk about this more after, but that she diverges in terms of her sensitivity, her sensory sensitivity to things, which leads her to not like being touched by strangers or even other animals or even sometimes me. That's something that is out of the norm. And many people, I've talked about this on here before, but many people assume she's cute and cuddly and that they can just come right up to her. But she does not enjoy that. And she needs a minute to like get to know somebody before she allows them to pet her. She also typically doesn't like it when you put your hand in her nose to sniff, which is something that we put in that category also, right? As like I would say like a neurotypical dog. That's like a big no-no for her. So there's so many examples I can give. I could just go on and on and on. Maybe I'll give more later, but like if I were to use that term, I would definitely put her under it.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah, there's just like she has a different way of perceiving touch and other experiences that like she has different needs because she's experiencing the world differently.
Yeah, and she doesn't, I mean, I think to what you were saying before, like she doesn't behave, I mean, she doesn't do the doggy things that we think doggy things are.
Right. Yeah, she does it her own way.
Yes, she does dog her own way.
So I want to give a little more context to the term neurodivergent. And I want to be mindful also that, again, like you had said, these are social justice terms. And it's important to acknowledge that because whenever we're comparing humans and animals, it's important to remember that humans have been compared to animals in order to justify harm against them. And I would say, especially neurodivergent people, have been treated that way. And so we don't want to not acknowledge that. I don't want to not acknowledge that. And I also want to make sure that we, We were honoring the true definition of the term, which I feel like I feel good about, like talking about that socially dominant norm, or expectation of behavior. I feel like that's really the root of those terms.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting is how we, first of all, thank you for saying that. Of course, completely agree. And I think, yeah, we have to tread lightly when we're using terms that we apply to humans on to animals. I mean, even when we were talking about mental health labels, things that were meant for human beings. But I also think what's interesting and in how we introduced this already is it's just shows how human beings we project a lot onto animals, especially dogs, because they're our best friends.
Exactly.
And a lot of those norms that we were discussing, we could also apply that to human beings, right? That we what's socially acceptable is, I mean, similar. It's like staying in your lane, thinking a certain way, being a certain way at work and in school environments, not thinking out, thinking differently or behaving differently, or yeah, it's similar in that sense that there's this box and there's this line that needs to be that is thought of to be the right line of typical of normal. And we do it to dogs.
We do. And that's not to say that the suffering that dogs experience as a result of that is the same as the suffering that humans experience as a result of that socially that social expectation. But there is a, I think we're bringing to light this subconscious judgment that we tend to fall into, and we're noticing there are different places where we do this, and one place is with humans and another place is with dogs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly the way I am also thinking about it.
Now, there, since you mentioned mental health labels, we didn't talk about this last time, but neurodivergent is an umbrella term that encompasses a lot of different things. It's not a diagnosis, but it does cover autism and ADHD and learning differences like dyslexia, structural nervous system differences like spina bifida, conditions like epilepsy, and also encompasses all the mental health labels and sensory processing differences. And then it also can encompass acquired neurodivergence, which is like if you've had a brain injury or after extensive use of psychedelics or even after extensive meditation, your neurophysiology could change in a way that is divergent from the norm.
That's an interesting one with the meditation. That makes sense. So, well, it's interesting you bring this up because then when we're talking about neurodiversity in this way, then I actually am even more hesitant to put it onto dogs, which
Interesting.
is interesting. And I'm not sure why I have that feeling, but maybe because of what we were talking about before that I think some of those quote unquote labels are kind of more reserved for human beings, but we see, and we talked about this all season one, that we see symptoms from those things in dogs, perhaps, right? So yeah, that's all I wanted to say about
Well,
that.
there is a lot of use of some of those same terms for dogs already. Like we see in our lives and in the literature that dogs can be hypersensitive to sound or to touch. They also can
Talk
be
about
depressed.
anxiety. Sorry.
Anxiety, depression, post-traumatic stress. They can have epilepsy. I don't know if they meditate, but
Maybe.
that could
But what about like I was thinking more about learning difficulties and autism. I think Yeah,
Those are
that's
different.
those are different. And I think, yeah, that's a more complex, complicated. I mean, why I'm saying that, I'm not, I think it's it, I think some of those things and their what goes under them have a lot to do with humans because of like needing to learn in a certain environment and be a certain way that has to do with being human more than dog.
Yeah, I
Does that make
agree.
sense? Yeah.
Yeah, because like if you think about like one of the differences in autistic people is differences in eye contact, right? And eye contact is a very human social behavior. And there are various ways to do it and various preferences for it. But it's very different with dogs. Like dogs don't have the same physiology in terms of sight. And they have a much more strong attunement with their sense of smell and obviously an infinitely like more acute sense of smell. So they're different in that way already. So we can't expect them to make eye contact in the same way.
Right.
And so then, like, how does that impact? Like, I don't think we can take the definition of autism and just put it on dogs and say,
No.
like, that's happening in dogs.
And I think it's the same with some like learning difficulties. I mean, dyslexia, for example, like that is like has to do with reading and numbers, and dogs don't do that. So that's like a very specific term that we use for human beings that has to do with learning how to read and learning how to do math and things like that, which dogs don't do. Or maybe they do, I don't
Maybe they just haven't gotten there yet. I don't know.
know. But I guess in a
Actually,
way, we could talk about dogs potentially having learning difficulties in terms of not being able to learn things that we expect them to, or that deviate from that norm or the neurotypical, which is the word we're using. So for example, you used the crate, liking the crate or crate training. So for Duchess, speaking of my little neurotypical baby, I mean neurodivergent baby, her baby, she never liked the crate. It never worked. Was never happy in it. Always barking, get me out, get me out. And still is that way. So confined spaces are actually something that she really doesn't like. And that, I mean, differs from what we believe the norm is about dogs, right?
Totally. Muggins is similar. Muggins did use a crate briefly when they were younger, and they didn't love it. And so we stopped using it. And I noticed that, like Duchess, it's has to do with confined spaces. Like Muggins really doesn't like if I put a baby gate up in the house. Even if they have access to half of the house still, they get very concerned about that space. Being in the car, they don't love that. So we had to, I was like, for a while, I was taking Muggins like once a week. We would go somewhere and they like were like, no, I don't want to do this. And I was like, oh, maybe it's the car. And then Tom and I sometimes are like, we can never get a smaller car because because Muggins already doesn't like the SUV.
Oh, Muggins is also very large, so
That's true.
going into a small car wouldn't be uncomfortable, maybe.
It wouldn't work out. But yeah, I think it has to do with visual sensitivity, like when you're seeing things up close, especially like I can imagine being in a crate, like talk about claustrophobia, like the walls are really close to you. And that can be really overwhelming for someone who's visually sensitive.
Yeah, and I see with Pepper and Biscuit, just to show more of what we consider typical, they love to lie on top of each other, be in a very small space, be in the car, they sit on the same seat together, they like the gates. They like to go into the space. Even if the gate is open, they go in there because they like to feel like protected, I think, and safe. And so it was interesting because when I first got them, they came to live with us. I at first felt guilty because I was used to Duchess, and I thought, wait, they want more freedom. They're unhappy. They don't like this. But I realized, especially, Pepper became a little escape artist. So we've had some, I've had to come up some creative ways of keeping the gate closed. But when she would escape, in the night and just be in the kitchen area, I knew because she was barking and restless and very unhappy to actually not be in the space. It made her agitated. So I had to guide her back in and close the gate, and then there's no more agitation. So it's just interesting. Again, I think that's what we typically think of dogs like that, those confined behaviors. But Muggins and Dutches are an example that diverge from that, right?
It sounds like Pepper and Biscuit really like that structure, as in addition to like the smaller space, it's more comforting for them.
Also, so
I think there's something about movement too. Like, movement is a sensation, and it's also a physiological need that nourishes the nervous system. And sometimes, it's important to have control over how much you move, or it's like important to have the option to move. So crates and confined spaces limit access to movement and also autonomy. So those are things to think about for like reasons why a dog might need more freedom or need more structure.
And I mean, and we are using this word. We talked about from the, when we defined it, that it's about celebrating differences. And I think this is a really beautiful example where we have four dogs that we can use as an example, and they all have differences, and we can celebrate them all differently. Even with, for example, with the cars, Duchess actually likes the car, so there's like a difference there. And it's not every dog is the same. I think humans, we have more trouble with that idea than thinking about humans being different.
Interesting. Why do you think that?
Because I think we have this idea in our head of what a dog is and what they're supposed to provide and what they're supposed to do. And so it's very, I think a lot of people get very surprised when they get a dog and realize, oh, they're not conforming to what we thought a dog is supposed to do.
And when they're not meeting those expectations, it's usually because they have some sort of behavior problem, and that can be really stressful for us. Like you were saying before, the excessive barking could trigger our nervous system to like go into a fight or flight, especially if we have hypersensitive hearing, or if it's just like stressful because every time we take a walk, we have to be so vigilant about like where are the cats, where are the other dogs. How close are the people going to get to me? And
But I guess, I mean, that is like a pro of using this term is to, from a social, cultural level, that it introduces the idea that dogs are individual beings and that they are unique and that they don't all think the same way and they don't all behave the same way. Which, living with dogs, it's quite obvious to me, but I realized if you don't live with dogs or interact with them, it's less obvious.
Yeah, that makes sense. Totally. I really like thinking about dogs in this way, because I feel like it opens up a lot of curiosity about like why is a dog behaving that way? You know, if you think about variation in sensory processing, I think it's kind of fun to be like, oh, why does a dog like not want to get in the car? Is it are they visually sensitive? Is there a smell? Do they need more movement? Is it the time of day? You know, like it brings a lot of questions, which then also brings a lot of options for things that we can change to help the dog to succeed.
I love the way that you're saying that because I think with curiosity, you kind of trump anger and frustration also. So instead of being annoyed that the dog won't jump in the car, then we can ask ourselves what's going on, and that just improves your relationship with the dog and also your own mental health.
Exactly.
I've definitely learned through you to through Sharon, you too. I had to specify. I've definitely learned to do that with Duchess, and that has been a game changer for me, and how I interact with her. And I also want to add to it how I accept sh certain things about her. So certain things that really annoyed me before, I just am able to say, okay, like this is also who she is. And it might deviate from the norm, but that's the way it is. And like it just helps me, yeah, accept her more.
That's awesome. I love that. Like when you recognize like that's who she is, and then you sort of take yourself off the hook for needing to change her, that like totally flips everything into this different perspective where it's like, oh, actually now I can get to know her. And there are other things that I can change, like the environment.
Right, exactly. And yeah, and managing the environment, which I guess, for neurodivergent people, a lot of times, managing l the environment is what's helpful. It's not necessarily like stuffing yourself with antidepressants and, just trying to get through what we're expected to do. It's actually changing the lifestyle, the environment. Those are ultimately the things that make us feel better. So, do you think there are any cons to using these terms, neurodiversity and neurodivergent, neurotypical,
Good question.
when
Well,
talking
I
about sex?
think in terms of neurodivergent, because it's an umbrella term, it's not specific. So, like, it could mean anything from panic disorder to epilepsy, and so it's like maybe it's not useful except if except for like specifying that like your dog needs a different way to do things, but it doesn't really describe like what does your dog need.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, like I could say like I've thought of Muggins as neurodivergent as well, but Muggins is completely different from Duchess. And like has different hypersensitivities and different preferences, different styles of attention. So we can't, so like using that term for both of them doesn't get to the root of like who are they as individuals.
Yeah, I see what you mean. And it also, I think it through this conversation, I was thinking, and it also doesn't take into account personality necessarily, which is a whole, that could be a whole podcast on itself. Like, what is personality, versus just like, I mean, but maybe personality is how we think, how we behave, what our nervous systems are like. We could make an argument for that, but also it maybe not. So I think that's because what we're describing also when we're talking about these differences is some of it is personality that also plays a role.
That's a good point. Yeah. And that like adds just adds another layer to the diversity.
Yeah, it does. It completely does.
Yeah. Well, does this feel like a good place to take a break?
I think so. So you'll hear from our sponsors, and then afterwards we'll be back and we'll talk about ways to help your pup deal with their behaviors if you consider them neurodivergent, or help them navigate the world.
I love that. Cool. We'll see you soon. We are so grateful to Benson's Pet Center for partnering with us on today's episode. Benson's Pet Center is a multi-generational, family-owned and operated business with 8 locations in the New York Capital Region. Benson's has the largest selection of pet food in the area, If they don't have what you're looking for, they'll even order it for you. You can bring your dog with you to pick out their favorite treats, and you can even give them a bath at the self-serve dog wash in three of their locations. Benson's has competitive pricing even on subscription services, and I love knowing that my dollars are supporting a local business. The customer service at Benson's is consistently unparalleled, and the staff's extensive knowledge on pet nutrition is amazing. Can't make it out to the store? No problem. Order online before 3 p.m. on weekdays, and Benson's offers same-day delivery. And curbside pickup is available 7 days a week. Benson's Pet Center, where the motto is, "We love your pets." Thank you, Benson's. Now back to the show.
Welcome back.
Hey, everybody. So, for this second half, we are going to talk about how to deal with dogs who don't dog like all the other dogs. And my friend Erin Scott, who hosts the Believe in Dog podcast, she said that phrase or like described dogs like that as like not dogging like all the other dogs dog. And I just love that description for dogs who are different neurologically, behaviorally, and all of that. So how do we deal with
I
that?
love that quote. I think it should be like a t-shirt. It's a good, good one. Yeah, how do we deal with that? So I guess the question is, if you see that your dog is behaving in ways that are diverse, divergent of other dogs, how do you help them navigate that, those behaviors, and then also navigate. Wow, my pronunciation is going into a different direction. Too many languages. To navigate the social constructs that humans have created, and where they may deviate from that norm, especially when interacting with other humans and other dogs.
And how do you navigate the stress of all that? Because it's like if your dog is not dogging like all the other dogs, then training is not going to go the same way for you as it is going for other people. Like I certainly experienced that with Muggins in a group class when we were younger. Like everyone else was able to just like be in their little stall doing the exercises, and me and Muggins had to like run outside every 5 minutes to go move around more because Muggins needed more movement. So it was just like the same, like the training methods might not be working, and that can be really frustrating. It's easy to go down a spiral of like, what if it's me and I'm just doing everything wrong? And it can be really embarrassing, especially if you're in like a group class or you have friends with dogs and their dogs are like easy or just learning the things they're supposed to learn, and your dog is struggling.
Yeah, I mean, oh, I can attest to having a lot of stress and anxiety and self-doubt around that with Duchess, especially in her earlier years. She did not respond to regular training, I would say. It started with the crate. The trainer I would have would say, yeah, so the barking should die down like after a while.
Here.
And she should get used to it, and we'll do it in time intervals. So 10 seconds, we'll keep the gate open and then we'll close it. And like I did all of it and it just never worked. Even with having, even just basics, really basic stuff, like it was hard. It was definitely really hard. And I would say took extra time actually, because I was about to use the example of weight. And she definitely learned it, but it just took extra time than a regular dog. A regular dog. See, look, I'm also stigmatizing poor touches. Then you would see typically, I guess, is the right way to is a better way of saying that.
And I think about it a lot with hygiene care. with Muggins because that's something that Muggins really struggles with because it's touch-based and Muggins has hypersensitivity to touch. And so I can't just give Muggins a bath or brush their teeth or clean their ears. You know, I can't just do that, you know, with them. I
Right.
have to do it I had to learn a completely new skill set to be able to do it in the way that we can get it done and in the way that is less stressful for Muggins.
Which is really challenging, I mean, for you. And also, I think what's interesting is it makes you have to think outside of the box, right? And get creative. And there's no manual. That being said, there is no manual, period. I mean, it's sort of like parenting a human. You don't get, there is no manual. Like, there's some things that kind of maybe work for some kids or some dogs, but it's going to be different also for all of them.
Yeah, because each dog is unique and you're unique. And so you have unique needs, both of you.
Well, how do you deal with the stress of it? Of the stress of having a dog that you could label as no neurodiverse.
Well, one way I deal with it is going to therapy. I had, because of the like, in the interaction between Muggins's behaviors and me as a person, I was getting triggered by Muggins's behavior, which we talked about, I think in the trauma episode last season, about how like Muggins would pull on the leash and react to other dogs or people, and I would get really overwhelmed because of my sensitivities and my post-traumatic stress, and I would go into a freeze response or a fight or flight response. And so I needed to work with a therapist to help me like unpackage that and explore like, okay, what is happening? Why am I reacting this way? And how can I help myself so that I can take care of Muggins and help them because they're also struggling and feeling overwhelmed in those situations.
What you're saying is so powerful, though, because what you did is that you observed. So, like, if I break it down, like, you noticed something inside of you that wasn't working. You noticed something that wasn't working for Muggins inside of them, and you then got your own help. You got Muggins their help. You came up with creative ways of like building upon that help, and I think that sort of speaks to how to help a dog that may fall under this umbrella term.
Cool. Yeah, thanks for describing it that way.
I think, actually I'm gonna fast forward to today and how I struggle with Duchess's behaviors. And it's interesting because getting Pepper and Biscuit has definitely had her behaviors get sort of ramped up again and in a different way
Interesting.
because she's never had fur siblings before. And it's really easy, I think, and also just this is the season of life I'm in that I feel anger really easily and I get really mad, and frustrated and annoyed. And I often, if I, so for example, like she'll bark at them every time they come out of their gate to go outside or vice versa. And it's not really at them, it's like barking to the sky, like howling. And I just find it so, I get so angry because I don't get it. I'm like, I just, why do you do this every time? But I think those are one of those moments where what I was talking about, like accepting her and helping her in those moments instead of getting angry, like that's the key. And how I do that is that I, first of all, I let myself feel angry because it's okay to feel angry, but I don't take it out on the dogs and I take a breath. And I also try to get creative and think about how can we shift this that it's not happening every single time because I'm getting so angry and annoyed. And also, I look at her and I realize like this is probably anxiety and a need for control. And, I try to empathize with her, I guess, in those moments. And then going from there, okay, what can we do? Like, what's the action plan?
Oh, I really like hearing that you get angry and that you allow that, because it is okay to have whatever feelings you have in response to your dog's behavior. But that you like recognize that you need to like take a breath and care for yourself so that you can then be curious and creative about Duchess.
Yeah, and I think I wanted to use that example because I want to okay, feelings for listeners because it is okay to get frustrated, it's okay to get angry, it's okay to have all those big feelings. And then what do you do with it, right? Like that's sort of the question. And I love what you're saying, like how do you turn it into curiosity? And there's several steps to get there, and I think that's very individual.
Yeah, totally. Because in order to be curious, you have to feel safe and not stressed. And so it's like, how do you get through the stress of what's happening so that you can be curious? Is it also like it was really important for you, it is really important for you to understand why Duchess is behaving the way that she is, and that lack of understanding is just as frustrating as the behavior itself.
Yeah, I mean, especially in those moments, like what I find myself, the anger actually comes from this place of like, why are you being mean to the other dogs? That's what I project onto her instead of, that's my gut reaction is stop being so mean. But that's not what's going on. I mean, I don't think she's intentionally being mean. She's aroused by the situation and she's barking at the sky, and doesn't like the feeling of being out of control, which I can empathize with,
It's so hard when things are happening unexpectedly. I know that for myself. Like, I don't like if somebody just all of a sudden knocks on my door. Like, who are you? What are you doing here? Or even if I'm expecting someone, I like to know exactly or like close to like what time they're going to arrive because that surprise is really dysregulating for me.
Yeah, and I think, Duchess, like control in her environment is important for her to feel okay, which is interesting because then it's like, okay, well, how do you navigate that, and how do you, like, I'm also not going to just allow her to run my household and like, right? So there has to be a balance, and like, how do I help her deal with the things that are going on and that will inevitably go on? And how do we also maybe make the environment a little like safer for her, safer feeling? So it's a dance, right? And I wanted to jump forward. I wanted to talk about the first example with the crate training and jump forward to an example now because it shows like the journey and like the different things that we've gone through, and that it's not necessarily something, there's no like before and after. Like it's a process, and it's like part of my relationship with her and part of her living with me,
Yeah, totally. So
Yeah.
I'm curious, you were mentioning before that Duchess has a hard time when people put their hand out to like let her sniff. And so I'm curious how that has, like, how you've navigated that.
Yeah, so good question. And I think that's like a really good example of helping a dog who deviates from the norm, or what we perceive as the norm, in a social environment. And oof, that's a stressful one because, most dogs, like probably 90% of dogs, like to be introduced to a new human by sniffing their hand. And I would like to say that it's not like a tight hand out, it's like a loose hand because some people make that mistake, like that will stress them out. But if you do like a loose hand, they want to sniff you and get to know you. Duchess does not want that. She will go for the bite and the fingers. It scares her. She doesn't like having a hand in her face. I don't like having someone's hand in my face, so I can also empathize. So wow, that was a hard thing to navigate because naturally people say, "Can I pet your dog?" And I'll say yes or no, depending on the situation. And if it's a yes, they go for doing the hand thing because that's what we do. And so that's, it's required a lot of like hypervigilance of situations. But eventually, just learning Duchess and seeing how she does meet people when she was a puppy, I realized that she is okay with sniffing people's feet if the feet don't move. I've gotten into some very silly situations though where people get scared of Duchess, believe it or not, because I mean some people are afraid of dogs and like barking scares them, and it yeah barking I mean it happens to all of us, right? Like it makes you fight or flight, and if a strange dog is barking at you, sometimes you run.
Of
And
course.
Duchess, if she's trying to sniff feet start jumping, it's just not, it's a disaster. So there's been a lot of disastrous moments, but we try our best. And basically what I do is I instruct people on how to meet her. So I say, let her come to you, let her sniff your feet, don't move, like stand still, and I'll let you know when it's okay because I can tell when she relaxes. And so that's just been the way that we dealt with that. But it's, it came from observation and some creativity on my part. And also, in the past, I used to treat her also when we would do that at the feet. So, yeah, so that's been the way that I've dealt with that, like behavior that definitely lies outside of the norm.
Well, what I love hearing is that you didn't try to change a duchess. You tried to change what the other person is doing. And that's so much more effective because you can't change duchess. She's always going to be afraid of people sticking their hands in her face, and she feels threatened by that. So the best way to help her to behave the way that you like is to have that not happen. And you have to tell people not to do that.
And what I also do though with other people is I get their buy-in of like helping me like help her so that they feel like they're also part of this like experience of like quote unquote training her. So that's always also been like another way that's been helpful to sort of explain it to them.
Awesome. So I'm imagining, like, from my own experience, it's usually like you r run into somebody on the street and they're like, "Is your dog friendly?" And then what would you say?
Well, it depends on the situation. Sometimes I say no, depending on how I feel. Or Duchess, or yeah, it just depends the situation. Like if we're walking really fast, I usually, or walking by, I usually say no, because Duchess doesn't like that. So I just know when it's appropriate and when it's not. But sometimes I say yes if it feels like a good moment, or I'm getting like a good energy from the person because Duchess is very sensitive to energy. So if I get a good energy, I'm like, okay, yes. And then I say, she likes to meet people in a specific way. Please like let her sniff your feet first, and then I'll let you know when it's okay to pet her.
And then has anybody like challenged that or like not listened
No.
to you?
No, never. The
Awesome.
only thing that has ever happened is people might get scared if she barks and then start jumping,
Sure.
which I mentioned. But that's like unusual. No one has ever challenged me. They just accept it.
That's awesome. Cool. I love that. So I love how, like you said, it depends because you're right. Like every situation is different. You might not feel like interacting or giving that instruction
Also,
to someone, and that's totally fine. Or you might feel like, not this person, for whatever reason, like Duchess isn't feeling it, or you're just not feeling it.
I'm not always going to say yes for sure. A lot of times I say no, actually.
Nice. Yeah, I think that's totally fine.
I gotta get somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like it's a process, it sounds like, to have that happen in a way that's comfortable for Duchess. And that does take time and it takes energy on your part too.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, so that's like a win for us, I think.
Yeah, I think that's really awesome. There is a similar similarly with Muggins. Muggins likes meeting people but gets overwhelmed and worries that they're going to touch. And like Muggins recognizes patterns really easily. So like they know if someone says like, "Oh, is your dog friendly?" Muggins automatically knows, "Oh, they want to come over and they might touch me." And so they get a little jumpy or like will like bark sometimes. And that's like, I have to make a choice. Like, am I gonna interact with this person? Is this not the right situation? What is Muggins feeling? You know, what am I feeling? So yeah,
Yeah.
it's a lot to go through.
Well, and I think one of the things we can learn from these situations that our dogs help us learn is to, think on our feet, trust our gut, and also how to be assertive.
Right. Yeah. I think it's challenging with like other people, like strangers and even people that you know. And then there's a different level of this when you're talking about you taking your dog to the veterinarian, right? Because like all of that is touch based. And now you're in this situation where like the veterinarian is the expert and the healthcare provider. And they might be needing or wanting to do certain things or telling you to have your dog do certain things. And if your dog is struggling with that, it can be really challenging to be assertive and be like, actually, no, we're not going to do this procedure today, or we can't do it like that. I need to do it a different way. And it's just like a whole different a dynamic.
Yeah, that's really difficult. That's definitely a whole new thing. It made me f think of a really funny story of Duchess that highlights this. So she, I forgot why she had to have anesthesia for something. I think she had like a, I don't remember. There was some reason she had to have anesthesia. And so, they keep them at the vet for a couple hours afterwards, and they had put her in a crate.
Oh
But when
no.
I got there, she I found her under the front desk because
Oh.
they she was whining and crying because she doesn't like it. So they had put her under the front desk to recover the
Oh,
receptionist at the receptionist's feet, which I thought was really cute that they
that's
actually like listened and got her because that was not protocol.
yeah. Oh, that's
You
really
know.
nice that they did that
Yeah.
for
It was really nice. That was a great vet place in Amsterdam.
Awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I ended up finding a vet to come to my house,
That's
which
amazing.
I am so lucky and grateful for that, because Muggins like needs a lot of communication about what's going to happen and needs a lot of choice about procedures. And when we were going to a clinic, Muggins like just didn't even want to be in there, let alone interact
Yeah.
with anybody. And so then it's like, wow, how are we going to do this? And I just happened to find this vet who had started a practice to come to the house in order to reduce stress for the animals. And
Oh,
now
I love
Muggins,
that.
yeah, it's so great. Muggins can go through
That's
their
great.
cooperative care and can consent to injections and like examination stuff. And they just think it's like a fun, like, oh, my friends are here to visit me.
That's so great, though. I mean, I wish we could do that also for human beings.
Yeah, that
That
would be so nice.
would
Yeah,
Pap smear at home, anybody?
just come on in.
I'll do it on my bed.
Right?
Way more
That'd be way
comfortable.
better.
Yeah. I
So, does it feel like a good time to move into our care tip?
think so, and I'm excited about this care tip. So, can you lead us on it, Sharon?
Yeah. So this is a care tip called consensual petting with dogs. And so with dogs who are neurodivergent or who have hypersensitivities with touch, and or who need a different approach to social interaction, and being touched, it can be really helpful to give them a lot of choice about what's happening. And so, like we were talking about, it's really common for people to go up to a dog and then put their hand out to the dog. And so, what you're doing when you do that is you are coming into the dog's personal space, and then you're putting your arm out, which is a lot of visual information and could be like threatening or scary to the dog. So the first choice to give the dog is how close to get to you. And so the first step is to allow the dog to come to you, and invite them to do that somehow. And so you might do that by backing up, just like backing up to show them that there's space and inviting them to come closer to you. You could also, I'm going to show with my other camera so you can see me. Okay. So you can see Muggins here, but I don't think Muggins is going to demonstrate because they're sleepy. But let's say I wanted to pet Muggins. And instead of going up to Muggins, I would come over here and say, "Hey Muggins, do you want to come over here?" Or I might get down like this and like invite them. Sometimes I do this and say, "Come on over, do you want some rubs?" And because I know Muggins, I know what words they know, and I know like the hand signals, so I know that they understand what I'm asking. If it's a dog that you don't know, you could use the same things, you know, like a lot of dogs are really they're really able to understand body language, right? So if you do something and they've seen their owners probably like do this, you know, or like do something like this. So use your body language, use your words, and then just give the dog a second to decide. Muggins is deciding to remain on their bed and take a nap. And so then that's the end of it. There's nothing else that I'm gonna do in this situation. If Muggins did come over to me, generally, the dog will they'll give you the part of their body that they want you to touch. So if they come over to you and maybe they come straight toward you and they give you a paw or something, then you might just touch their paw, or you might rub their chest because they're straight in front of you. Sometimes Muggins will come so that like they're like facing perpendicular to me, so I have their side. So I might rub their chest or reach under and rub their belly. And so basically just touch whatever part of the dog is giving to you to touch. And then you want to give the dog an option about when this interaction is over. So you do that by pausing for a moment, like pet them a little bit and then stop, maybe even back up a little bit and see if they want some more. And then they'll tell you if they want more petting or if they're done. So sometimes, if they want more, they might just stand there and not go anywhere. They might look at you. Sometimes Muggins will put their paw out to be like, "More." Or sometimes they'll wag their tail a little bit. So anything like that is probably a signal that it's okay to keep petting. And then if they don't want any more, they're gonna walk away. They're gonna increase the space between you and them so that you can no longer reach them and touch them. And so that's the so the steps, just to recap, let me change my video back. So to recap, it's back up and invite the dog to come to you, touch them in only on the spot part of their body that they give you to touch. So, whatever part is closest to you. Generally, most dogs like the chest or the belly. Most dogs do not like their head being touched. Sometimes they like their back being touched, but not always. So, just go ahead and touch the part that they give you. And then, after maybe like 5 or 10 seconds, stop touching them. And give them the option to either ask for more or to walk away.
Love this. Oh, I don't, we should have done this in episode one.
Yeah,
I
this
wish that like everyone just got this manual in school.
is. I know. Yeah, it's such a more nourishing experience for both the human and the dog because, like, you know for sure the dog really wants to be touched by you and is en and you know whether or not they're enjoying it.
Also, I feel like it would prevent a lot of accidents from happening, like
Exactly.
safety wise. But I love what you were saying with the backing up, because I think, like, and that's something that I say with Duchess also, that I tell people, let her come to you. And that's, I mean, that's essentially what we're saying here. And so don't get in the space, because that's going to make them bark. One of the things I wanted to add, I liked that you crouched down. I know with small dogs, sometimes standing over is a little scary to them. So it's just something to try. Like if you're with a small dog, standing over might freak them out. And then it's like good to go down. Because yeah, they just, I mean, they're small, so it could feel like you're towering over them or something. And also so important what you said with the head, because that is first thing. I mean, I think a lot of people have been taught to meet a dog by sniff the hand, touch the head, but that is, and that's a threat. You're putting the head over their face, and that completely, you know, you're like, it looks like you can grab them by the neck, like that scares them. So, but one of the things that's funny, I realized with Duchess, as you were describing this, when people let her come to them, or she just like takes a liking to someone, she turns around and sits down. She wants them to pet her back and then her butt. She wants butt scratchies.
Yes, I
So
love
also, of course, diverging from the norm on that, also this Duchess,
it.
but and then if she wants more, she like does a little like woof. Or she just walks away.
Fantastic. I love that. So
Yeah.
weird.
So it's just an example of like what, you know, what Duchess would do in those situations.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I
Yeah.
wanted to add to the crouching down part. We talked a little bit earlier about how eye contact is not something that's natural for dogs. Eye contact is great with your own dog. It actually releases oxytocin in both of you, and it can be really socially bonding. But some dogs, if they don't know you, then straight on eye contact can be really intimidating and scary. So if you're going to crouch down, you can just turn your body to the side a little bit so you're not staring at them head on.
Yeah, that's super important. I think most animals find eye contact as a threat. I think we're the only, like, we're like odd in
Yeah, we
that
are
we don't.
strange.
Yeah, of course. Weird.
Yep, silly humans.
All right, I think I hear my kid coming home, so I'm just letting you guys know while we do updates, she might come running in here. So, do
Awesome.
you have any updates for us, Sharon?
I wanted to plug Erin Scott's podcast, Believe in Dog, because I did an episode with her. We talk about neurodiversity in dogs, and I share more about my journey with Muggins. So go ahead and check out that episode. And in terms of human canine collaborative, I am ready. I'm about ready to come out of my hibernation on Instagram. So keep your eyes peeled for some new content and some just some like different approaches to supporting you and your dogs. And if you don't want to miss me too much, hop on my newsletter, and I'm still putting newsletters out, so you'll get all the updates and you'll be able to stay in touch with me. So if just go on hc-collab.com/newsletter and sign up for free, and we can stay in touch.
Sounds great. I'm gonna go listen to that podcast
Awesome.
episode too. updates. Oh my gosh, talking about hibernation. I feel like I've been in a little bit in hibernation of cloud doodles. Because there's just been going a lot. Wow, I can't speak. A lot going on in my personal life. That was like a Freudian slip, I think.
I
It's
think
like
so.
mumble jumble
Hey,
chaos.
yes.
But you know, follow us on Instagram for updates. We are always on there. So Cloud Doodles is the handle, and then we also have a newsletter that goes out here and there. But yeah, I don't think we have any major updates right now. Just follow us along, and yeah, that's where you'll be updated.
Awesome. Thanks for
Yeah,
sharing.
and thank you to everybody for supporting us and our podcast. We I mean, I guess speak for both of us. We're so like honored that you guys would listen. We have listeners and people listen to us, and you know, I hope that we have been helpful and informative, and you feel seen and heard and validated. Please give us any feedback on what you liked, what you didn't, what we could improve on for upcoming seasons, and hopefully we'll have a season three sometime in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, listeners. If you liked this episode, go ahead and hit like or hit follow along so you don't miss any more episodes. And if you really loved it, go ahead and go to buymeacoffee.com and drop us a few bucks or subscribe on Spotify and get access to our Afterthoughts episodes and our entire Care Tips library.
Thanks for that plug, Sharon. And thank you for being such an awesome co-host. This is it's been an honor to work with you.
Oh, awesome. Thank you so much, Angela. I really appreciate hearing that. And I really love these conversations. I really appreciate your flexibility and generosity, as well as your lightheartedness and anti-perfectionism, which has really
Oh.
helped me.
Thank you. That was very sweet. I'm blushing.
All right, end of season two. We did
Yay! Pop the champagne, puppy champagne. Those
it.
exist. All
Awesome.
right. Bye, everyone.
Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to support the show, go to buymeacoffee.com/HDHHpodcast and send us a few bucks so that we can stay awake and energized to make more content.
Even though we are licensed professionals in our own field of work, Angela, LCSW, Sharon, OTD, and CDBC, this podcast is not intended to replace individual therapy for humans or behavior support for dogs. We approach our conversations from an exploratory, observational, and strictly personal lens.
If you are struggling with your mental health, your dog's behavior, or if you or your dog have experienced a recent traumatic event, please see the resources section on our websites for a list of resources and places that can help. Visit either www.hc-collab.com/happydoghappyhuman or www.clouddoodles.com/happydoghappyhuman. This podcast is made possible by the collaboration between Cloud Doodles and Human Canine Collaborative. Check out our websites at www.clouddoodles.com or www.hc-collab.com. Special thanks to Tom Fox for support with editing and production consulting. You can find Tom at tomfoxphotos.com. Special, special thanks to Muggins, Duchess, Pepper, and Biscuit for sound effects and story examples. We could not and would not ever want to do this without you.